Relationships Matter. Wisdom from Steve Merriman. Today, on the Ultimate Ground Rules.
But I have raised you up for this very purpose, that I might show you my power, and that my name might be proclaimed in all the earth. 3, 2, 1. Welcome to The Ultimate Ground Rules, a podcast built specifically to encourage, empower, and strengthen the faith of coaches as they live out their God-given purpose to develop the next generation of leaders. And now, your host, Dave Pritchard.
Hello and welcome to The Ultimate Ground Rules. I am your host, Dave Pritchard, and I want to thank you for taking a few minutes out of your busy week to check out the show. As always, like, share, and subscribe so we can reach as many coaches and athletes as possible. Recently, I sat down with Steve Merriman, AA pitching coach in the Colorado Rockies organization, and we discussed his path in coaching, the influence of a coach, and it became very evident that Coach Merriman's heart and focus are on creating solid relationships that have the power to transform the lives of his players. He offered a lot of valuable insight, and I'm positive that our conversation will be as much of a blessing to you as it was to me. Interviews like this are what the Ultimate Ground Rules podcast is all about. Grab your notepad and enjoy our conversation with Coach Steve Merriman.
All right, guys, I am here with Steve Merriman, pitching coach in the Rockies organization. Thanks for joining us, Steve.
Dave, thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. You come highly recommended by Kevin Wilson. For guys that happen to listen to the podcast, if you don't know about Kevin, he is a private hitting instructor for a lot of professional guys. He has his own podcast, KWB Radio. So I highly encourage you to check that out. And Steve was on episode 3 and episode 59. So Kevin has kind of hyped you up, and I don't know if that's a good or bad thing.
Well, it's a great thing. I'm happy to have the opportunity to get to talk to you and just kind of chat about things that I think are important for us as coaches in today, this game.
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of just a little background with the podcast, you know, my goal is just to, you know, kind of fuse faith and sports. And I know that I target a lot of baseball coaches, but not just specifically baseball, but, so that's kind of the goal, and just to be an encouragement to guys and just stuff along those lines. And if you don't mind, just to get us started here, if you want to give us just a little background information about yourself, about your coaching background and just your personal background, and you can kind of give us as much information as you want.
Yeah, my background, I played Division I college baseball at Central Michigan University, and was studying to be a teacher. In fact, got my degree in education, have a teaching degree, and thought I was going to be a high school social studies teacher and a high school baseball coach. And at the end of my playing time at Central Michigan and finishing my degree in student teaching and all that, I was asked to coach in college, and I wasn't sure. You know, I played Division I and loved the experience that I had there, and but I knew coaching was something that I, you know, was going to enjoy because I still love the game, and liked working with players, and got the opportunity to coach at a Division II school in Michigan. And then the very next year, I was working at a summer camp at the University of Michigan and got asked to come on staff with Bill Freehan, the former major league catcher with the Tigers. He was the head coach at the University of Michigan in the early mid-90s, and went to University of Michigan for a season, and then University of Toledo after that. And that's when the pro side happened. I got the opportunity to be a part of Buddy Bell staff with the Detroit Tigers at the major league level, was the bullpen catcher and served a couple of different roles at the major league level there with the Tigers, 1996 to 1999. And, you know, crazy route, and kind of went back and forth over the last 20 plus years between college baseball and professional baseball. And most of my time in coaching has all been on the professional side. I've been just about every level in professional baseball. It's been a crazy ride.
Man, that's pretty cool. How would you say, if I asked you the question, how does your faith shape you as a coach? How does your faith play a role in what you do?
Your faith is always present. I think when you're a coach, because the way in which you respond to players, how you respond to people around you within your program, at the high school level and sometimes at the college level, you have to deal with parent organizations, you have to deal with dugout clubs, you deal with the different entities that do a lot of things for your program, and your faith is always on display. Sometimes we aren't always perfect with how we say some things sometimes or how we do some things. And I think, as a young coach, when I was much younger and, I was a hard charger and, very focused, very driven, I certainly made a lot of mistakes early on in my coaching career where I didn't step back and look at maybe the message that I think God might have been trying to show me or to hit me with, or to, have me handle something differently or be less impatient, or be more understanding, be more thoughtful, be more loving, with how I dealt with things. So I think our faith is always there. For me on the pro side, it is a great opportunity for any coach at any level to be able to impact young people. I don't care if you're coaching little league or you're coaching at the major league level. The ultimate goal ultimately is to impact people and to be able to make a difference for people in their lives, both with gifts and skills that God has given them to be able to play the game, but also to help them understand how important balance is in their life when it comes to the playing of that game. And you can say, well, balance for a 12-year-old or balance for an 18-year-old? Absolutely. Because I know as a 25-year-old or now as a 50-year-old, balance is a crucial thing for us to be able to exhibit, I think, qualities that God has given us.
Yeah, absolutely. And that kind of leads me, I'm going to dive right in. One question that I was really excited to ask you about, because, with your background, seeing the game from multiple levels, I'm curious what your answer is. But, one thing as a high school coach that I felt like that I have struggled with, especially in the past, I would say 4 or 5 years, is this issue of identity. And, specifically with my players and, just seeing more and more guys who identify themselves, and even some parents at times who they identify themselves as I'm the baseball player, or identify themselves as I'm the baseball parents. And I'm curious, being in pro baseball, where you could argue, I guess, that the stakes are even higher as far as, this is my livelihood. How do you help players find that balance and understand that, in terms of identity, there's more to me than just a baseball player?
Man, that's such a great question. And I think that it hits at all levels. So much of being an athlete revolves around success, meaning, for baseball, as a position player, today's game, I was 3 for 3, or I was 4 for 4. And as a pitcher, I went 6 innings. I gave up no runs. And it becomes, as a parent, they look at their identity and go, well, is my son being recruited? Is the coach giving my son the quality innings? And parents wrap their identities into their kids and how they're performing. Major league players, a lot of times, I think, go through this maturity process of not wrapping their identity into their successes or failures. And so one of the things, you know, and depending on the level of the guy now, and I'm talking about a major leaguer, but depending on the level or a professional player, sometimes those guys wrap themselves up in how hard they throw. Sometimes they wrap themselves up in how great their season is going from a number standpoint, because the game revolves around the numbers. One of the things that I've done over my career is to try and develop that relationship with players that allows for those kinds of conversations that are very open about, hey, you know, what did you think about your evaluation here? How do you evaluate this outing? How did you evaluate the last, you know, two or three outings? What's the healthiest way to look at what you've done so far for the season? Is it two series? Is it a month? And begin to try to help guys do a better job of understanding that it's not an all or nothing kind of situation. And investing in them in knowing who they are as players, investing in knowing who they are as people, where they grew up, what they've experienced in their life, understanding who they are and where they've been and where they've come from to begin to be able to know how to deal with them as a player. And I think that it's a tough job as a coach at any level to begin to look at those things and try to help shift their thought process away from success or failure, good day, bad day, good week, bad week, and begin to show them, especially in baseball, that it's not about one or two or three outings, one or two or three series, 1 month or 2 months, however long it is. It's about a full body of work. And only through having their minds begin to put things in a good perspective, in a good place, can they get away from this societal thing, the social media thing that is identity and who they are and how it works. You know, we're so tied to social media that begins to be how these players do formulate what they think of themselves from outing to outing. Really developing a relationship with those players as a coach to help them think about other things. And it can only come through genuine time. You know from dealing with players at the high school level that they're pretty engulfed in a lot of different things. They're talking about, you know, cars and girls and movies and, you know, Fortnite and the latest video game crazes that go on. And getting them to think in a bigger picture perspective is not a very easy thing to do unless you're super dynamic, you know. And even then, kids are not always going to be trusting right away. People are not trusting right away. It's a consistency that I think is required from today's coach. And that makes it tough to be consistent. We want consistency out of our players. We would love them to be steady, you know. But it's also our requirement of coaches to be consistent with how you deal with players, how you deal with parents, how you deal with situations. And that's, I think that that's how you go about helping kids and players get away from that identity.
Yeah, that's really good. I like that idea of consistency there. And, you know, if you demand it from your players, you got to demand it from yourself. And I think if you take that to another level, I think a frustrating thing as a coach that, you know, you've got to stay the course is especially dealing with a high school kid. And you probably have seen the same thing with some professional guys, but you know, you're having those conversations and you're planting those seeds with the realization that they may be gone before they reap the benefit of that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Even with a professional guy, I imagine, you know, it may not click until he's 3 years removed from wherever you were.
Yeah. Well, and I experienced it as a junior college coach. You know, you get them as freshmen, they come out of high school programs, and They learn how they need to practice and how they need to work, how they need to think, and all of the things that begin to formulate, you know, the type of player that you're trying to mold them into and the type of person along that line. And then they leave, they graduate, they go to a 4-year school or they go wherever they're going to go, you know? And so you have a short period of time to try to mold and help put a piece of what you believe is most important as a coach into that puzzle. And you're right. Sometimes you don't ever get to see the benefit of that. You know, I have lots of players that I've been fortunate enough to coach, you know, at lower levels when they first get into pro ball, and a lot of those guys are in the big leagues, and I will get random texts from some of those guys, about just wanting to talk about different things, sometimes totally unrelated to baseball. And those are the moments that you as a coach have to really know that you made a lasting impact. You have added a piece to that overall puzzle of who that person is, because they've reached out or they want to talk to you or they want to come back. And you know, as a high school coach, 5 years down the road, they go on and they come back and they want to find you. And they may not always say thank you, or, and we don't expect that, right? But they want to come back and they want to see you and they want to be around the team. And that's a good thing. That means you've left that impact.
Yeah, that's kind of like payday.
It is. One of the verses for me that, you know, that I've read a lot over the years, and I actually have underlined it and highlighted it in my Bible and things like that, is, you know, Philippians 2, you know, verse 3 through verse 7. And I think this is one of the many verses that sort of help shape my thought process as a coach under these exact type of situation we're talking about. And it says, do nothing from selfish or empty conceit. And I'm reading from the Amplified version. I grew up reading the old King James, you know, therefores and the thou arts and all that sort of stuff. But this, the Amplified version says, do nothing from selfish or empty conceit. And it says, through factional motives or strife, but with an attitude of humility, being neither arrogant or self-righteous, regard others as more important than yourself. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also the interests of others. Have this same attitude in yourselves, which was also in Christ Jesus. Look to him as your example in selfless humility, who, although he existed in the form and unchanging essence of God, as one with him, possessing the fullness of all the divine attributes, the entire nature of deity, did not regard equality with God a thing to be grasped or asserted, as if he had already possessed it, or was afraid of losing it. He emptied himself without renouncing or diminishing his deity, but only temporarily giving up the outward expression of divine equality and his rightful dignity by assuming the form of a bondservant and made himself in the likeness of men. And again, Philippians 2, 3 through 7, that there's so much in just those few verses that I think help shape what our hearts should be as a coach, no matter what level we're at. We do nothing out of selfishness. I can tell you that there was a time in my young coaching career where all I wanted to do was win. I wanted to win whatever championship it was, because as a player at the Division I school where I was at in the Mid-American Conference, we were, you know, conference champions 3 out of the 4 years I was there. We played in NCAA regionals, you know, those 3 out of 4. We had won the conference like 9 out of 11 years. It was a program that had been built around success and winning. And so I found myself thinking, you know, this is what we're supposed to do. And so we have to do this, you know, so we've got to go hard. We've got to teach right. We've got to, you know, do the things that require players to be put in situations to be successful. And I believe you can do that and should do that, but with the right motives, with the right intentions for developing the player. You know, if you develop the player first as a young man, then you will be able to plug 15, 25, 35, whatever it is of those young men together to form a championship caliber program, because you've taken the time to develop each one to be able to put them into that environment. And that has to be at the forefront of how you go about doing it.
That's good. And, you know, you hope too in that process that it, you know, I don't think it ever fully takes care of itself, but, you know, within that process, you create guys that understand what you're all about and take that upon themselves as well with each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So what do you think if a young coach asked you this question, what would be your response? What does a player need most from a coach?
Oh,
can you answer that question, or does it change for different players?
Yeah, I think it does change for different players. You know, I've often said, you know, that your job as a coach is to recognize what that player needs at that moment. You know, when I was with the New York Mets, I had a young man who was in the minor leagues at the time. His name was Heath Bell, played in the big leagues, all-star closer. But he hadn't been past double A yet at this point. This is early 2000s, I think 2004, 2003, something like that. And, you know, he complained about not being in big league camp and felt like he should be there. My numbers were this and that, and I should be there. And I said to him, I said, well, let me tell you something. And I pointed at another guy, Matt Lindstrom, who also ended up being a pretty good big league pitcher, closer type guy, Marlins and White Sox and so on. But I said, if Matt Lindstrom falls down right now and is in need of CPR, should we give it to him or not? Well, of course. I said, well, why should we give it to him? Well, because it's going to save his life. Okay, why else should we do it? Well, he has family that loves him, and he went down a long list of things. And I said, how about it's what he needs at that moment? And he thought for a second, and, you know, he's like, yeah, you're right. It's what he needs at the moment. And I said, every player needs something at a particular moment. They need the right words. They need the right encouragement. They need the right instruction. They need the right motivation. And you as a coach have to know what it is that player needs at that moment. And the only way to do that is by getting to know the player. And kids today say, oh, well, he got this or he got that. That's not fair, right? Have you ever heard that one from a player? Well, that's not fair. He got this. And I said, your definition, I usually tell players, your definition of fair is incorrect because fair does not mean equal. Fair in a team setting does not mean equal. It means that I have to give that player what he needs at that moment. If I have to let the kid drink, you know, a Slurpee or drink a Coke or whatever before he goes to practice because that makes him motivated, then I need to help him do that. Now, you know, obviously we draw a line, right? There's things that we wouldn't do, but if I need to find what it is that those players need at those moments that help them to be able to perform. So it's not about fair because it's not equal. It's about what does the player need at that moment.
And that's really good. Which that's, you know, that in a nutshell, that's the difficulty of coaching, right? You know, to determine what it is that they need. That's the hard part.
It is. It is in today's time frame, and I don't want to use that term as in today's time, meaning like, you know, there's a blanket that's thrown over everything as a generalization, but players today, we have to understand, players today have access to a lot of different things almost instantly. Their best friend is Google. They want to know something, they can Google it. Doesn't mean it's right, you know, because you can save the Northwest Tree Octopus. Just get online and Google Northwest Tree Octopus, and you can send money to that foundation. I mean, we have to help players understand what's right at that moment or needed at that moment for the best outcome, not only for them but for the team. And that's the hard part with parents, I think, is for parents to understand that they've chosen to put their son into a team environment, which means that we have to make decisions that are best for the team, not best for one individual. You know, when I make decisions with pitchers or players or coaches, when I've been an assistant pitching coordinator for two different organizations, Kansas City Royals. You know, when I first went to Kansas City, I was an assistant pitching coordinator, and now with the Cubs last year, I had to make decisions for coaches also and help coaches develop as well as players. And you can't treat everybody the same. They have different tools, different abilities, different skill sets. We believe as coaches in the best for players, and we want the best. And parents have to understand that they've chosen to put those kids and their sons into a team environment. It's not an individual environment. And we have to do what's best for everybody to be successful, not just one. And that's hard.
That is hard for all involved. But, you know, like you said, I think that's, you know, you're doing what's best for the whole. And so would you have any advice for coaches that are having difficulty with that and maybe dealing with players that don't quite understand the big picture there?
One of the best pieces of advice I could, you know, could give would be to number one, have the right kind of communication with players. Communicate with players. I hear too often from players that I work with, both amateur, because I do a lot of lessons in the off season with high school players. I mean, these kids are 14 up to 19, and there's a lack of communication. And I think that only is going to continue to be the case as we move along here, and that we can communicate by texting. We can communicate with syllables, you know, TTYL. Everybody knows what TTYL is. It means, you know, and, you know, talk to you later. It's like, you don't even have to speak words. You can just use letters. And it we have to get back to learning how to communicate things with players. And I think for any coach, one of the best ways to be able to get players to understand the kind of culture you want is to communicate with them that message. You know, obviously, I think you need to be organized, right? You've got to have your team directions down. What is it that we want to have shown to people when they watch us play? You know, we want to be known for hustle. We want to be known for grinding out at bats. We want to be known for, you know, grinding as a pitcher in every inning, compete every inning with every pitch, you know, things like that, whatever it is that those coaches say. But at the very foundation of all the things you lay out would be how I communicate with players and giving them honest communication. And it has to be done in a way that's not 5,000 feet away. You know, one of the rules that I've had with coaches as a coordinator, when they instruct, don't instruct from far away. Don't coach from a distance. Coach up close, because it's a whole different dynamic between the coach and the player when you're right next to them and you're talking to them and you're instructing them. But if that guy's out at shortstop and I'm up at home plate because I'm hitting ground balls and I stop the drill and I'm yelling out at the shortstop, that automatically begins to create an environment where, you know, it's a raised voice environment. It's a, not that it is meant to be, but the way people perceive things looking at a distance is, you know, left open to that distance. Maybe if they were up close, it's perceived differently. But I think that it really lets people know, and you know this from being a teacher in the classroom. You have a kid, you're talking and teaching a lesson, and you have a kid that's kind of chatty. You know, one of the strategies that you use, I'm sure, is you still keep teaching, but you walk up next to that student while they're sitting in the desk. And if you stand there while you're talking, they typically get quiet because you're next to them. So I've used that principle with coaching, and I've told a lot of coaches, don't coach from a distance. Coach up close. If you need to stop the drill, pull them together and talk about something to help them in the drill and then go back. You know, it's worth the 15 seconds to run in from whatever position they're at and discuss something that's important, something that's vital, whether that be communication between position, whatever it is, you know?
Yeah, because the goal is for them to get it. And so when they feel like you're totally invested, the chances that they get it are going to go up. I think that's what you're saying, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And they know you care about them. When you get close to them and you talk to them, they know you care.
That's really good. So what are some other – so if we got some young coaches listening, you know, who like to take ideas and tweak them and make them their own, what are some things that you feel like you do that maybe are a little unique in order to reach your players?
Huh. Well, I mean, it's so funny because I don't think I have, you know, some things set up that are, you know, scripted. So much of it happens just by being sometimes silly, sometimes just being funny, by doing or saying funny things, you know. Because when you get older, you have experiences to draw on, so you can talk about some crazy things. Like I'll give you an example. One guy had a hard time remembering what time to be somewhere. He was always late, whether it be for a bus or be for a workout or practice. And so, you know, one day I brought in this big old clock on a string and just hung a clock around his neck, like Flavor Flav or whoever it was back 10, 15 years ago that had this big old clock in a video. And it was relevant at the time, you know, because those kids knew who it was and knew who he was. And, you know, it was funny. So I think it's about having a good sense of humor in how you let those players know. But I think it's also about spending time getting to know who those players are. You know, it's sometimes players don't always necessarily like you being that close to who they are and what they do, you know, but you can find ways and find things that let them know that you care about who they are. And I think that's just some of the things I've done, just being silly, being funny, finding ways to connect, coming up with nicknames for different guys, asking them about nicknames as you go through things, or inventing nicknames. That's great in baseball, right? Everybody's got a nickname in the game. So just, you know, showing the real side of who you are with them, you know?
Absolutely. I'm going to ask you a selfish question here. Something that I have been throwing around in my brain, coming from a rural, you know, small community, which I know that there's a lot of small communities out there. How can coaches better prepare their players to go from a big fish in a little pond to being just a little fish in a big pond? You know, I've been the guy, and now I go off to college or I go off to pro ball, and I'm just, instead of being the guy, I'm just another guy.
I think what you're saying, or what you asked me, is how do you help players go from being in a small community and being a you know, the go-to guy, everybody knows who he is, into a bigger pond? How do you deal with making that transition?
Absolutely.
Yeah, again, that's a great question. And I think one of the things that coaches have to help players understand is that you may have a pretty special talent in the area that you're in, the conference that you play in. You're one of the all-conference players every year. But when you look at, you know, how many conferences there are in the country, and then you look at how many players are playing the game, you know, you have to say, what's the best way to identify yourself and to self-evaluate where you think you might fit? And you do that, I think, by helping players experience other opportunities, whether that be in the summer where they get to play in an all-star game of some kind, or they get to participate in a travel or with a travel organization that's going to grab some other kids, and then do some self-evaluation afterwards. Because what happens with players that go from small communities into a bigger environment, they go from a small, you know, class, you know, 8 school into a Division I program, And all of a sudden they're faced with a completely different set of things. If coaches haven't helped them along the way self-evaluate by spending time communicating with them, they're going to be left to their own devices to try and deal with it and figure that out. And I think it boils back down to, how did you as the coach plug into that young man's life and have a way to help him properly identify pieces of his past experience? Hey, tell me about what it was like playing for such and such team last summer. Oh, well, we went and played here and played there, and great. Oh, and I got to see so-and-so who's from, you know, Alabama, and I got to see so-and-so from New York or New Jersey. Oh, how did you compare with those guys? And you'll find when they begin to evaluate, they want to almost save face. And you as a coach have the perfect opportunity to say, oh, yeah, but I mean, you're able to do A, B, and C, and don't compare yourself always to other players and how they performed. Compare yourself to, did you do what you were capable of doing when you were asked to do it? What was your job? Did you execute your job? Do you think you did that to your best ability? And that communication goes a long way with players being able to self-evaluate.
That's really good. I like that about self-evaluation. Is that a problem that you encounter a lot, or is players that have a hard time doing that?
Absolutely. I mean, at all levels. Like I said, I work with high school kids in the off season, but even pro guys, young pro guys sometimes. Again, because you go back to the media, you know, I've had multiple players drafted in first round that, you know, have this identity that, well, I signed for, you know, $2.4 million, so I'm supposed to be the next latest and greatest thing. So I didn't have a very good season. What's going on? What's wrong? Something's wrong. Mm-hmm. Well, helping players self-evaluate is crucial for their development. And, you know, what I say to pro guys that get to higher levels or even the major league level, you're never as good as the media says you are, but you're never as bad as the media says you are. You have to learn at that level to live in a very consistent level world in your own mind, because if you're too up and down, you'll never come out of the struggles. And that's a hard place to be for any player, to not feel like you ever get out of a hole.
So let me ask you a tough question, and you can answer it however you want. But I know one thing that guys like to hear other coaches talk about, you know, no doubt this is a difficult job. And I think that we both could agree that it's only getting harder. Like you talked about social media and people have more access to information. And so it's only getting more difficult. And as a coach, with your own experience, you know, what are some of the struggles that you've had, and how have you dealt with them? How have they made you better? You know, you can feel free to walk us through, you know, a specific situation or just speak in generalities. Totally up to you.
One of the things that I kind of say when people ask me that, or to kind of talk about that, or when I've shared with players, is, you know, if there was a bumper sticker that was made for me, what would my bumper sticker say? And, you know, I think what my bumper sticker would say would be in progress. I think I learned something about myself. You know, every experience I go into, and I'm, you know, far from perfect in a lot of things. You know, I think there's something most recently that I struggle with a couple years ago, and that I kind of felt like every situation that I went into, I was going to fix it. You know, I was going to be the one that made it better. I was the difference maker, you know. And what kind of happened to me through that process was, I kind of felt like I was bigger and, you know, smarter and knew more. And it crept into about everything in my life, how I dealt with my kids, how I dealt with my wife, how I dealt with family, how I dealt with everything, you know. It's amazing. Different people come into your life and share things with you and help you regain some of that perspective. And, that's where I looked at, like I said earlier, Philippians 2, but I also began to look at Colossians 1:10, because I realized when I started seeing myself feel that way or even act that way or think that way, it totally was opposite. In Colossians 1:10, realizing this, that it said, so that you will walk in a manner worthy of the Lord, displaying admirable character, moral courage, and personal integrity to fully please him in all things, bearing fruit in every good work and steadily growing in the knowledge of God with deeper faith, clearer insight, and fervent love for his precepts. We pray that you may be strengthened and invigorated with all power according to his glorious might to attain every kind of endurance and patience with joy. The first, verse 10, the first part of that is what really kind of hit me. And I had a brother share some things with me on some of that. And it just, to walk in a worthy manner of the Lord, displaying admirable character, moral courage, personal integrity, so that you will fully please him in all things. I'm like, yeah, that's what we want, right? We want to be pleasing to God. We want to, everything that we want to do for his glory and for the edification of him. And then the second part of that verse says, bearing fruit in every good work. Well, how do coaches show their fruit? I got to hear Dabo Swinney talk not too long ago at a press conference about how he wanted to be judged. And I think all coaches should feel this way. I mean, we want to be judged by how good our players are in the community, type of things that they pursue in their lives. You know, do they understand that their focus should be to become good husbands, good fathers, good brothers, good uncles? You know, there are so much greater things that we want to try to instill in those players that we get to impact, that we are helping them to bear good fruit. And so for me, you know, getting away from this idea of, you know, hey, I've got the answer, I know what to do, let me do it, or just let me be in charge of doing it, I know what to, you know, that whole approach, it sometimes is hard as a coach, because everyone looks to us for answers. You know, everybody comes to us and thinks that we're going to solve and fix everything around us. I mean, that's natural for a man anyway, right? We think we're the ultimate fixers. Our wives hate it when we try to solve everything for them. You know, you don't have to solve it for me. Just listen to me, you know, that sort of thing. And I would just, that's hit me probably the hardest in the last, you know, several years ago, about being, you know, aware of that for myself, because I want to hear that, you know, the verse that says, well done, O good and faithful servant, I've, you know, put you in charge of a few things and you've done well. Now I'm going to put you in charge of a lot of things. You know, we want to hear that we've done a great job. But it's about how we're going about doing it, you know?
Absolutely. So you may have talked about it a little bit right there, but my next question was going to be, so what's your ultimate goal as a coach?
Yeah, my ultimate goal as a coach is to honestly help develop young men to be better men. You know, one of the sayings that that I have on different things that I put in, and what I put up within my teams, is a quote from Kennedy, John F. Kennedy. Don't pray for easy lives. Pray to be stronger men. And if we want things to be easy in our life, and they're not going to be easy in our life, we've been told that, you know, in the Bible that this life is not going to be easy. And so the goal is to not have it be that way, but for us to build stronger men, to help them understand how to handle adversity in their life, to help them understand how to deal with difficult situations, not necessarily always life and death type things, but just right. to deal with adversity. Whatever the situation is, some kids have to deal with broken homes. I came from a broken home. Some kids have to deal with abusive adults in their lives. There's lots and lots of things that people deal with and are struggling with in their daily life. And as a coach, I have to try to be different than what they're used to experiencing and what they're used to seeing done. And so my job, what I want to try to do is to help build stronger men.
Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome. That reminds me of, Jesus talking about building your house on the rock. And, he says, and the rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew. You know, he doesn't say, just in case that happens. He says it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So what's your foundation when that does happen? And I think that's what you're saying is how, to, you know, hopefully we can prepare guys to have that solid foundation in those moments.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's seeking people to help support you with that, seeking out those who give you that encouragement. And it can come from a lot of different sources. And I've discovered that over my 25 years in coaching is that there's a lot of people that can give me things that help encourage me if I'm looking for it, right. If I'm seeking that out.
Awesome. Well, Coach, I know that time is valuable and we appreciate yours. And just to close here, I want to give you the floor and just let you provide any advice. If we've got some young coaches listening, just any advice that you got for young coaches.
Understand how difficult the job is, number one. Understand all of the different elements that go into that, but find ways to make yourself better on a daily basis. I didn't probably do that enough early in my career. And by that, I mean, read books that are away from your, baseball. Read books on parenting. Read books on how to be a better man. Read books on or listen to podcasts. I have a lot of different podcasts that I listen to. Listen to people teaching and talking about how to strengthen and edify you through different means. And I would say, be consistent with those things. Find something that you choose to set up to do every day. I have an email that comes to me every day from Baseball Chapel, and I read that little four paragraph edification every day. It comes to me every morning at like 5 a.m. and I usually am reading it by 7 or 7:30 with my cup of coffee. Find something that you can be consistent that will feed you and charge your batteries.
That is awesome. Well, Coach, I want to thank you for your time, just for even considering coming on, and just appreciate all that you had to share.
Well, Dave, thanks for having me. I loved it, and I'm open anytime you want to do it.
All right, sir. Well, good luck this season.
All right. Thank you. You too, Coach.
Thanks again for joining us on the podcast this week. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe so we can grow our community of followers. Until next week, keep growing tomorrow's leaders and stand firm in faith.